The views expressed in this podcast are solely those of the individuals being interviewed and do not necessarily represent those of the Greater Winter Haven Chamber of Commerce. You're listening to It's Happening in the Haven. I'm your host, Brianna Price. Each episode, I get the privilege to speak to the amazing people taking Winter Haven and its surrounding Central Florida area to the next level. We're future-focused, celebrating our entrepreneurial history and leveraging it for our bright future ahead. This podcast is made possible through the generous support of our sponsors who believe in advancing commerce and community here in Winter Haven.
The Low Payment Kings, powered by the Mahalik Auto Group, is proud to be sponsoring Season 5 of the Winter Haven Chamber Podcast. Hello, I'm Alex Mahalik. The Mahalik Auto Group is a family-owned and operated business, first founded in 1966 in Michigan by Ralph Mahalik Sr. The family opened Winter Haven Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram in 1991 and continue to expand in Polk County. We are now running three additional dealerships, Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram Fiat at Posner Park, Lake Wales, Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram, and Alfa Romeo Fiat of Winter Haven. Not only are the Low Payment King teams dedicated to finding you the perfect vehicle, we are also focused on building strong relationships within the community and treating our vehicle buyers like family.
Hello, hello. This is Anna Saavedra filling in for Bree. Today, I am joined by MJ Carnevale, the City of Winter Haven's Public Works Director, and we talk through everything, lakes management, hurricane preparation, and more. So stick around and stay tuned. Welcome to the podcast, MJ.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're happy to have you. Now, I know, because you're the Public Works Director at the City of Winter Haven, you've been working with the lakes, though, for like a while, right?
Yep, since about 2011.
Dang, that's over
here in Winter Haven.
10 years.
Yes.
So you have a very unique perspective of what goes on to it, what or goes into the lakes, and how to take care of them, everything like that. So I'm excited to have you on, because if you guys don't know this already, this season of the podcast has been all about the Winter Haven lakes, the chain of lakes, and water skiing, and just talking about all things that come with having a city that has such wonderful natural resources like our chain of lakes. So MJ, to start out, can you tell us a little bit about what your favorite part or what your favorite fact about the Winter Haven Lakes is?
Yeah, I think one of the things that's really cool about our local lakes is they're what's called an umbertrophic system. So that means they are purely rainfall driven. So no water flows into our lakes. Everything that is there comes from the sky. And I think that's kind of a cool feature about Winter Haven's lakes.
Yeah, that is super cool. I would not have known that.
That's what I'm here for.
Also, my face when you said umbertrophic. I've never heard that word before.
Yeah, it's rainfall driven.
Okay, so, yeah. Cool.
There's no, unlike a lot of other lakes where you have streams that flow into it, we don't have any of that. It's all rainfall driven. All of our water is constantly moving away from us.
Interesting. So that is definitely something that's unique about our lakes, correct?
Correct.
Awesome. What else is there that's unique about our lakes?
I'd say the hydrology in general. So like I said, there's all of our water comes from rainfall. It's constantly all moving away from us. And what that means is we're at the top of the watershed. So we are part of the Upper Peace River watershed. So when water flows out of the chain, for instance, it goes through a system of drainage ditches that then goes to what we call the Peace Creek Canal that goes to the Peace River, and then that flows all the way out through Charlotte Harbor down to the Gulf of Mexico. So we're at the very top of that whole system from a surface water perspective. The other thing that's really interesting and again, unique about Winter Haven is that we're also at the top of the groundwater system. So
okay.
Below us, we have the Upper Floridan Aquifer, where all of our drinking water comes from. But the bottom of a lot of our lakes touch into the top of that aquifer. So as that aquifer goes up and down, that can have a big impact on whether lakes are losing water or gaining water from underground. So
interesting.
Overall, just kind of a unique. That's kind of what separates these systems from, I think, a lot of the other lakes within the state.
Okay, that's awesome. And the aquifer is a big part of the one water kind of plan, correct?
Yeah, so I mean, understanding hydrologic restoration as a whole is really a big focus of that One Water plan. So it's understanding that if we were to, let's say, restore wetlands throughout our area, we could hold more water here from a surface water perspective, which would let us recharge more water, recharge the aquifer, have more water available for drinking supply, and have kind of a sustainable source for that long-term drinking supply water. We call that the project with the wetlands, we call that the Sapphire Necklace, which is just one piece of the overall One Water initiative. But that's the long-term plan, is to restore those wetlands and be able to hold that water back in our area, whether it's from a very large rain event or whether we're in drought conditions. Having those wetlands locally make us more resilient to those changes over time.
Awesome. Now, what is involved in like restoring wetlands?
Yep. Good question. So we just did a project. If a lot of people probably haven't seen it yet, but it's called the Lake Conine Wetland Restoration Project up on the southeast side of Lake Conine. And so that was a historic wetland that had been ditched. And so the idea was trying to get water off of that property. And so the city purchased that property about 20 years ago.
Wow.
And we worked with a few partners. We worked with the Southwest Florida Water Management District, the state DEP, and then Polk County and the city all partnered. And so what we did was we went in and we dredged out that property essentially and created a series of big wetland cells. So there's about a 400-acre watershed that goes from Lake Conine all the way up to about the Northeast Complex on MLK Boulevard. And so anytime it rains, all of that stormwater used to go out of a ditch directly into Lake Conine. And now we've diverted all of that onto this piece of property. And so now there's this wetland that takes that water and cleans it up before it goes into the lakes. So it's about a 30-plus acre wetland.
Oh, that's awesome.
And when we did it, we laid the foundation for what will be the Lake Conine Nature Park. So
okay.
We did all the wetland restoration work. We built berms. We put in some stormwater infrastructure. We did a lot of sediment removal out of there. We've planted back wetland vegetation. But when we did all of that, we literally did it to lay the foundation for that nature park long term. So now we can come in and those berms are set up to be able to have trails built on them and boardwalks added in there and some park amenities on the north side of the property.
So it'll be a nice place for residents to kind of take advantage of and visit.
Yep.
That's awesome. Now, just about a month ago, we had a hurricane. And I'm sure that, for your department, that's, you know, a lot of work, both in preparation and after that. But before we kind of get into what that means for you and your team, what do hurricanes mean for our lakes?
Yep. Yes, that's a really good question. And it's timely. I think might have been telling you earlier that like Thursday of this week was the first time since September 22nd, so about a month ago, that I'd touched anything work related that wasn't hurricane related.
That's insane.
It's been a busy month. But you know, for us or for the lakes, one of the things that hurricanes has an impact on are the levels. So Hurricane Irma is a really good example. When Hurricane Irma came through, right before that, the chain of lakes was at probably a 5-year low, approaching kind of a 10-year low. So we're having trouble getting boats through canals. There's a lot of navigability issues starting to happen. And it was at the very end of the rainy season. So we really hadn't anticipated getting much more. We were looking at kind of a grim, probably few years of the way people get around on the chain of lakes. Hurricane Irma brought that level all the way back up, refilled that system, and we've stayed pretty level since then, which is fortunate. Now, the flip side, you know, this year with Hurricane Ian, we were pretty full to begin with.
Yes, we were.
And we had a couple weeks of, we had 2 weeks of really, really heavy rains. Mm-hmm. I mean, we had some storms that hit what we call the 100-year threshold leading up to Hurricane Ian, and then Hurricane Ian on top of it. So there's a lot of water moving around out there. I think understanding how water moves between the lakes is one of the really interesting things that we've gotten to see. There's a lot of flowways. So the flowway, there's a structure on Lake Lulu where water flows out of the chain of lakes.
Mm-hmm.
That was ripping down there. I mean, there was water moving out of there like I haven't ever seen. I mean, I've seen water flow out of that structure before, but the rate at which it was moving out of there was pretty outrageous. There's between Lake Silver and Lake Martha, there's a connection point there. That's an underground pipe that, again, most people just don't know is there. There's a lot of water, more water moving there than I've ever seen before. And then just a couple weeks ago, between Lake Elbert and Lake Otis, there is a there's a pipe that goes between those lakes to move water that was installed after Hurricane Donna. So Hurricane Donna was in 1960. Had a big impact on Florida.
Never heard of Hurricane Donna. No.
It was installed in 1960, or the hurricane was in 1960, and so we think this structure was installed a few years after that in response to the high levels during Donna. But Otis and Elbert are pretty close in elevation, and it's a long run from one to the other. So to get gravity fall of water from one lake to the other, they essentially had to elevate the side on Lake Elbert, and then they dropped the side on Lake Otis. So the bottom of that pipe actually comes in below the bottom of Lake Otis.
Oh, wow.
And then it goes into a well and kind of bubbles up. But we had to put water into that system. There's a pump system that you run on it. As far as anybody knows, that had never had water in it since it was installed. We're seeing some different conditions here. It had been dry for 60 years, dry enough for the last 60 years that we didn't get any water in there. So how water moves is a big factor for hurricanes for us. The other big piece that we're always looking out for lakes is water quality.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can get a big flush of rainfall, and it brings a bunch of debris with it that can bring some nutrients into the lake. But really, during hurricane events, you usually get a lot of dilution with that. Mm-hmm. So the impacts aren't as bad. And we have a pretty robust stormwater maintenance for cleaning our stormwater lines. And then we have a pretty robust street sweeping program.
Mm-hmm.
So generally throughout the year, we're trying to keep all of that stuff off the road. So there shouldn't be much built up to begin with. So the only stuff that you're getting in lakes at that point ends up being what comes down during the storm or what doesn't get cleaned up quickly afterwards. Mm-hmm. So those are the two, the big things. The other big thing we always are on the lookout for are kind of chemical spills, wastewater spills, stuff like that. But first of all of those facilities are like heavily regulated to prevent specifically that type of thing from happening. But then also, again, you usually have massive dilution. So if you have a wastewater overflow, for instance, a lot of times that system is overflowing because it's had a ton of rainwater get into it. And so the majority of what's getting out of there is probably stormwater to begin with.
Yeah.
And then, the dilution of that is, pretty huge. And I think people see sometimes the notifications that like, hey, there was a 1,000-gallon spill.
Mm-hmm.
Well, 1,000 gallons sounds like a lot, but when you put that in terms of like Lake Elbert, for instance, a foot of water on top of Lake Elbert is about 55 million gallons of water, and that lake as a whole is probably closer to 7 billion gallons of water. So 1,000 gallons into a billion, it's pretty. There's a lot of dilution that happens there, and so during those big hurricane type events, those are just more manageable.
Mm-hmm. So what is the cleanup process like for the lakes?
Yeah. During hurricanes?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. We're talking about hurricanes here.
Yeah. So for hurricanes, a lot of it is getting the brush up. And so getting that cleared off of roadways. And so we try to get back into street sweeping as quickly as possible. Because a lot of times that stuff doesn't end up in the storm drain. It just ends up in the roadways. Mm-hmm. And so we're trying to keep it from getting into the storm drain. And so we use a program. Our street sweeping program, like I said, is pretty robust. We drive where we're going to sweep based on connectivity.
Okay.
And so how the stormwater systems connect to the lakes. Some stormwater systems in the city, all the water goes into a pond first. Some of it flows directly to lakes. So we know where those are. Those kind of become a priority. We also have an understanding, thanks to our urban forestry inventory, mm-hmm. of where we have old trees that are likely to drop a lot of leaves, and where those are in relation to those stormwater systems. So, again, that factors into prioritization. And then so does our understanding of the water quality in the actual lakes. And so by putting all of that together, we kind of know where our hotspots are,
mm-hmm.
And try to get sweeping on those as quickly as possible after the storm.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Now, what would you tell people is the best way, especially if they have, like, lakefront property or a dock or something? Because I go around Lake Howard every day, and those levels have definitely been pretty high recently. So, like, how do you tell people to prepare for that? Do you do anything to prepare for that, or you just let it ride?
So it depends. So let's say if you have a dock on a lake,
mm-hmm.
All of our dock permitting references those high water levels. Mm-hmm. And so taking all of that into account when you build your dock is important.
Mm-hmm.
And recognizing that, hey, those management levels mean that this lake might get to that at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And the city's also put a lot of work into some codes and ordinances over the last, 70, 80 years that address setbacks from a lake. So, for instance, if you wanted to build a pool in your backyard, mm-hmm. and you live right on a lake, and that pool is within that flood zone, you know, you're gonna find out about that when you come in for your permit to build the pool. That hey, you're gonna get a lake in your pool if you don't. If you put
for
it here.
Sure.
So how do you adjust for that? So I think that's it. Is just going through those channels. You know, I know sometimes the permitting processes can feel like a burden, but they're there. A lot of times they're there for a reason, and the reason is to make sure that you know your docks and your pools and your structures in your backyard are all not gonna get flooded to a level we know those lakes will get to.
Now, outside of the lakes, I know you said street sweeping a lot. I mean, how long does that process take for a city like Winter Haven?
So just to get everything up. So for us, cleaning up after a storm starts, you know, basically as soon as the winds die down.
Okay.
And so our team gets out and we do what's called a first push on the roads. And so that's clearing off all the big debris and just pushing it physically out of the actual road.
Okay.
This storm, that took us, you know, a day or two, and then probably through it to the following Monday. So the storm was a Thursday, we really we were pretty much done with our first push by Monday, and there were still some trees that were tangled in power lines and stuff like that we were working with the power company on. So that's the first push. And then a lot of times we'll come through and try to start getting some of the really big trees that might still be impeding navigation on roadways, get those out of there, and then our solid waste team will start the actual debris collection process. And so as we hit those areas, we'll start sweeping behind that. And so as we start getting that cleared off, we'll get in and we'll sweep those areas.
Cool.
But, it depends. So this month, or this storm, in about the last month, we've gotten most of the big debris up off the ground through all of the city roads. In Irma, that took a lot longer. I mean,
for sure. Yeah. I mean, it went straight through here, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was just a lot more debris on the ground. It just took us a lot longer to get it cleaned up. There was also different resources directed at the cleanup after Irma.
Okay.
Because if you recall, there was a really big storm in Texas.
Yes.
Right beforehand. And so all of the debris haulers were in Texas already. And then Irma impacted the entire state. So the ones that did start trickling out of Texas when they came to Florida, you know, they didn't all go to one area. So with this storm, you had a little more concentrated impacts, and so the response has been more concentrated, and because of that, a little quicker, I think.
So each storm is obviously different.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, man. Now, I kind of want to circle back to the lakes really fast. And can you tell us a little bit more about the Sapphire Necklace Project?
Yep.
I know that the state government gave quite a lot of money for this project, I think, in the last year, correct?
Yeah, there's a handful of different grants, and it's a really, really big effort, but there's a handful of grants involved. But, you know, the goal with that, like I said, is really to store more water within our area. And so when it comes to a storm, for instance, a lot of our water, it's all shooting out away from us really quickly. And what we're trying to do is to force it all through small channels, right?
Okay.
And so all of our water is moving away, and it's moving out to the Peace River. So if there was, let's say, a large wetland in this part of the watershed where you could take a portion of that water and kind of spill it off and let it store there rather than trying to force it all out of one narrow path at the same time, it's like trying to merge traffic onto a highway. You know, when you're getting onto I-4 at Champions Gate there all that traffic's coming together, that's what we're trying to do with water, is we're trying to force it all together and push it out as fast as possible. But if you can create these wetlands, and that's, you know, a lot of these areas naturally had wetlands, and so this is how that system functions. So you're kind of putting back the way that nature used to do it. Storing that water in this part of the watershed slows down how it moves south. And then the flip side of that is you have more water stored in this area, so during those dry periods, you know, there's water that could be moved around, but then also your soils just hold more water. Your aquifer in the area holds more water. And so that kind of comes back to the lakes. And I think I mentioned earlier, you know, the way that the upper Floridan aquifer interacts with those lakes is really interesting here. And I think we've seen some of that. I think some of the high water levels on Lake Elbert are an example of that. If you think about our lakes as a cup with a hole in the bottom, right? So if you were to try to fill that cup with a hole in the bottom, water's flowing out of it, right? And so a lot of times when the aquifer is below the bottom of our lake levels, that's kind of how things are working. Water's moving out of the bottom of those lakes down to that aquifer. When that aquifer's way up, it's like you just took that cup and you stuck it down in a bowl of water, and now you're pouring water into it. So it just kind of, it's going to hold in there. It's going to pour a little slower. It's going to move a little different. And so that's why I think we're seeing in a lot of our lakes locally is you know, that cup with the holes in the bottom is now sitting down inside of another bowl of water.
Yeah. So when we're talking about the sapphire necklace and restoring wetlands, like, how do you pick where you're going to do those efforts?
Right. It's a good question. So a lot of the areas that have been identified are areas, like I said, where there were historic wetlands that were maybe drained. And so those become prime candidates because just from a regional hydrologic perspective, the water is already going there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's easier to just kind of pull it off. But also, it has the right soil conditions. There's a lot of the right, because that's how it was originally. It's just kind of putting that back. So that's a big factor. Another factor is just understanding which of those is going to have the most benefit. And then working with, various landowners and developers to make that happen.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Hello, I'm Greg Littleton, President and CEO of Citizens Bank and Trust. For over 100 years, Citizens Bank and Trust has been a stable and reliable banking partner in our community. Now in our third generation of family ownership, we strive daily to honor the legacy and traditions created by our founder, Mr. Lap Maxey, by providing outstanding service to our customers and the community. While other banks have changed names, consolidated, closed branches, and scaled back services, Citizens Bank and Trust has continued to expand and grow. We have offices throughout Polk County with additional locations in Dade City, Valrico, and our newest office in Plant City. Whether you prefer to bank in person, online, or on the go, our dedicated team of banking professionals is here to help. I invite you to visit citizens-bank.com to find the office nearest you. At Citizens Bank and Trust, we are proud to be your bank. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. Investment advisory products and services, not FDIC insured, not a deposit, not guaranteed, may lose value.
So your team, do they work on all of those kinds of, like, where the wetlands historically were, what the soil is like? Is that all within your team? Is this data that you've already had?
Yeah, that's a good question. So our team in natural resources does a lot of work on understanding the lakes and where they're at currently. As we kind of expand out, that One Water effort is really a citywide effort. So Our utilities team is very involved in that. Our parks and recreation team is very involved. Our planning team is very involved. So it's really a citywide effort. And so there's a lot of work happening through some various consultants. There's a lot of historic data that exists, and it's kind of putting all of that together to figure out what makes the most sense. It's understanding, working with our economic development team, where what the economic tie-in might be, what the development tie-in might be, working with our parks and recreation team to say, hey, what would this look like if this restored wetland had walking trails around it and boardwalks and opportunities for recreation next to maybe new development? And so how does all that start to fit together? So it's really a big effort with a lot of moving pieces. It could be as simple as just go out and buy land and restore wetlands. But I think there's the philosophy the city's had is, let's work with that as we grow and make that a part of the fabric of our community, the same way that the Chain of Lakes is part of the fabric of our community. And a lot of these wetlands, they end up encircling kind of the eastern part of the city, balancing the Chain of Lakes on the west, and you kind of end up with this nice sapphire necklace all the way around the city.
Awesome. Now, we had Dustin Everett here a little while ago. I know he's one of your team members, and he briefly mentioned the Lakes report that you guys do every year. Can you kind of expand on that a little bit?
Yeah.
What people can expect, how they can find it?
Yeah, Lakes report is it's awesome, and I mean that obviously I'm biased. I understand that, but I've done a lot of looking around, and I mean I've been doing this kind of work for a long time now, and I don't know of any other community that has the level of professional documentation that we have on our Chain of Lakes here.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that comes from that natural resources team. So that there's multiple sections in that. The primary section is just kind of a background primer on where does water move in Winter Haven? What does water quality mean when we say water quality?
Mm-hmm.
So some definitions on that. The second section of that really digs into some analysis. So what's happening on the lakes? What kind of shape are they in? How are they trending? And then the third piece of that becomes, what are the management strategies focused on making improvements to those areas where we recognize there are some issues? And that's it's a really great document. That team, their mantra for that has always been technical but approachable.
Mm-hmm.
So, that somebody who doesn't have a deep technical background can sit down and pick it up and glean a lot of good information from it.
Like myself.
Like yourself. or but likewise, you know, we have people from DEP and FDOT and the Water Management District who all reference that document. There was a big road project that we were working up with the DOT on lately, and they pulled that out and they were referencing the water quality information that we had put together for Lake Silver.
Yeah.
as part of their analysis of their roadway design.
That's awesome.
Yeah. The other piece of that's really cool is in the back, there's an appendix.
Okay.
And so that appendix has lake-specific information. So if you live on Lake Howard and you want to know what is the health of Lake Howard, how is it trending, and where is what's being done, essentially, mm-hmm. All of that information can be found kind of on that lake-specific page. The other thing that's really cool about that, you know, the state does work to improve water quality statewide. And I'm not taking anything away from the work that the state does, but, you know, they have a huge area to cover with minimal resources to
For
do
sure.
it. And so a lot of times the regulations that are set really become kind of a threshold for if it hits this point, it's in bad shape. And a lot of times, you know, they're really dealing in the world of, hey, it's past this threshold, it's impaired, and now we need to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
One of the really, really beneficial things about having the annual lakes report put together the way that Natural Resource does it is we're looking at those lakes and how they're trending and trying to, if we see a lake whose trend is maybe heading in a negative direction, is really taking a step back and saying, okay, well, what do we do about that?
Yeah.
Before it hits that point of impairment, how can we maybe start to turn that around? What might be driving it down? Are there external factors there? You know, what's going on? A good example of that is, you know, the Lake Elbert Trail mm-hmm. project that we're working on.
Yeah.
Lake Elbert over the years has I don't want to say it's had a really negative trend, but there's, you know, it's changed over time. And so
yeah.
that's something that the city's been watching. And so on that project, for instance, we're implementing a bunch of stormwater efforts to try to capture some of that nutrient runoff before it goes into the lake. So putting these projects in place, understanding what's happening, having that be part of the dialogue as the city looks at whatever project it might be.
Awesome. Now, how long does it need to be trending in a bad direction, I guess?
Yeah. Now, that's a good question. And one of the things to understand about lakes in general is the trends that you see, you know, a lot of times lakes change on geologic timescales, right? So
okay.
we're not talking fiscal year to fiscal year. We're talking, you know, decade to decade.
Got it.
And so trying to even in our trends, a lot of times you're looking at like a 5-year moving average.
Okay.
And so how is it kind of trending long term, big picture, and then understanding how do you leverage that? How do you where in the system, what might be driving it, and then how do you leverage it to improve it?
Awesome. Now, I know you have a dedicated team to help with that management of the lakes and their health, but is there anything that, like, an average resident can do to kind of aid you in that, in, like, just making everything better, improving or maintaining the quality of our lakes?
Yep. Yeah, that's a great question. So first off, just kind of learning, I think, is a big thing, is getting out. And like our team does some watershed ecology kayak tours. Those are really fun and educational and teach you about some of our systems. UF IFAS does a bunch of stuff locally. The county has some really good programs. There's just a lot of good education out there. I mean, even if it's not in Winter Haven, you know, if Lakeland has a cool program going on, go check it out. Especially because a lot of people that move to our area
mm-hmm.
aren't from Florida. And Florida systems, you know, we get a lot of we talk with a lot of people who say, oh, this lake's dirty.
Yes.
Well, okay, I understand what you're saying. But, you know, if you grew up on the Finger Lakes in upstate New York, which are stream-fed, 100-foot deep lakes that freeze in the winter and stay cold most of the year, that's never going to look like a lake in Florida where it's 85 degrees and it's 12 feet deep across the majority of the lake. You know,
mm-hmm.
They're just different systems. And so starting to understand what a natural Florida lake looks like and recognize that, hey, this lake is healthy. Yeah, there's a bunch of vegetation in it. That's the way a lake in Florida is supposed to look. It's
mm-hmm.
not going to have – you're not going to have a pebble-lined, you know, shore like you might in a river that's in the mountains of upstate New York.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're not going to be able to see your feet either.
Right.
And that's just the way it is.
Right. And in some lakes. And in some lakes you might be able to. It just it depends. And that's another thing that's really cool about Winter Haven. And one of the things really that attracted me to the area originally is as a from a from a research perspective, you have a lot of lakes with different morphologies or different shapes. You have a lot of different hydrologic stuff happening, and it's all within the same area. So from like a scientific experiment perspective, there's a lot of things that are controlled and all the same in this general area. Mm-hmm. And you can see how different changes in different lakes kind of play out. And that's really interesting. But from back to a resident perspective, so just learning more about what a healthy lake in Florida looks like is mm-hmm. a big first step. I think another piece is understanding the ways that you can do specific behavior changes on your property, right? Yeah. So maybe it's the way you fertilize. Maybe it's that don't blow your grass clippings down the stormwater drain. Mm-hmm. You feel that a lot. Where do you wash your car? You know, do you wash your car in the driveway and hose all that soap down the stormwater drain that goes right into a lake? Maybe understanding what lake watershed you live in is a really good place to start. There's a lot of people that don't realize, you know, the Lake Howard watershed, for instance, goes all the way up past the library in downtown Winter Haven, right? And there's direct piping. So if you, let's say, if you spill a coffee coming out of Richards, that coffee is going to flow into a storm drain and it will be in Lake Howard in a matter of like, you know, a minute.
No kidding.
Yeah. And so there's a huge area. So understanding that, hey, I live in a watershed and I have an impact, and what does that look like? And just be mindful of those things, mm-hmm. I think is a really good place to start. Another piece is building what we call rain gardens. So a lot of homes, you know, maybe you have a gutter that runs off of your roof mm-hmm. and it runs into your driveway and right out to the road and into that same storm drain and then right into the lake. So if you have an ability to capture some of that on your property and infiltrate it, a lot of the soils in this area are really good for that. So you build what we call a little rain garden. There's a lot of information on our website about that. And you capture that water, percolate it back into the ground. You're keeping those nutrients that might have come with that water out of the lake, and you're helping to recharge that aquifer.
Kind of going back to like storm prep and everything like that, I mean, obviously the Public Works Department does so much. I mean, you talked about solid waste collection, you're talking about lakes, everything like that. So what else does your team do to prepare for the city for a storm or any kind of like big disaster like that?
Yeah, so our team, for a storm specifically, one of the biggest things that we do is spool up a sandbag station. And just help people that, you know, might live in low-lying areas or live in Winter Haven. We don't have a ton of areas that are very flood-prone, but we do have a lot of areas where maybe the home is down low on the property because mm-hmm. it's closer to a lake. And so you might get some water that's going to flow across and come under a garage door or something like that.
We learned the hard way that you have balconies on the second and third floor. You need some sandbags up
right,
there.
Right. So there's just getting that station set up is always a big thing. Another thing that our team does is, the city's fleet is within Public Works. So making fleet preparations. So that's everything from making sure the city has fuel and diesel to run equipment and generators, making sure that all of our equipment, you know, our equipment's always well-maintained, but just doing that kind of once over to make sure that the front-end loader and backhoe that we're going to need to push roads open so that fire trucks and police officers can get down them, is all working properly. And then making sure that we have, kind of a backstock of parts and things that we may need after the storm. Another thing that we're doing a lot of times leading up to a storm is verifying flowways. So a lot of those pipes that I talked about, or mm-hmm. there's a lot of ditches around the city that move water from one lake to another. Again, these are things that I think a lot of people just drive by and don't even know
sure.
that it's there.
Yeah.
But just checking those and making sure that water's moving the way that it's supposed to. Again, those are all things that we do pretty regularly. But before the storm, there's some areas where maybe there's more prone for something to happen. And so we're kind of checking those hot spots a little bit. And then other teams throughout the city, you know, it's all hands on deck before a storm. So public safety teams are getting ready.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of utility infrastructure that's getting inspected. They're getting a lot of equipment ready to respond to a storm as power goes out. You know,
for sure.
Power goes out to lift stations. We're running generators on those things. There's just a lot that's happening citywide. So that's leading up to the storm. And then, you know, after the storm, like I talked about that first push earlier, again, it's responding, getting utility systems back online. Another big piece for us is getting traffic signals mm-hmm. Fixed back up. So a lot of times there's power outages, but outside of power outages, things happen, right? A tree falls on a span wire, knocks a signal down, stuff gets all twisted around, whatever, you know, power issues we have. So there's a lot of that gets worked through. We got a team that does an excellent job with that. Another thing that's kind of people probably don't recognize is after the storm, our planning teams and our code enforcement teams work together and our building inspection team, and they go out and they're assessing private property damage.
Okay.
So if a big tree fell on a house, if there was some flooding somewhere, they're working with those people to help assess those damages, and we report all that out to FEMA and kind of help with that whole process.
Awesome.
And then again, they do training throughout the year to be ready for that. I think, and then for us, finally, solid waste beginning debris collection, which is that's a big effort.
I'm sure.
And, you know, that goes in multiple phases. So we'll pick up large-scale debris, and we work systematically from the city center outwards.
Okay.
And then at some point, FEMA will make a determination that a formal first pass of the entire city is complete. And then we'll switch over to collecting either bag debris or more construction-style debris, whatever the priority from a FEMA perspective is. And make multiple passes of those. So, like I said, we're just about, I think, through a first pass right now.
Okay.
And so probably within the next couple of weeks, we'll get into those other phases. But so we're still a few weeks probably from being back to normal. But
okay.
Moving through it. And that's kind of the lingering one. You know, I think one of the challenges that we have in public works, I think, is that, you know, after a storm, within a week or 2 weeks, depending on the severity of the storm, everybody else is kind of going back to normal, and we're still got all this other stuff that we're putting back together behind the scenes. And that gets challenging for us, you know, because people then start coming back with their regular issues of like, hey, there's a little pothole on my road.
Yep.
And it's like, yeah, we're fixing a place where there was a cave in, you know, in a roadway. That's where our focus is today. And we'll get back to the potholes, you know, within a month or so. So that's just a big challenge for us after the fact.
And if I'm not mistaken, you guys have like a website where you can see like priorities for different things.
Yep. So really for the debris collection,
yeah.
Just so you can see, you know, it's hard to say we're going to be in this neighborhood on this day specifically, because I'll give you an example. In the southeast part of the city, the whole area to the south of Central Avenue and east of First Street, north of Cypress Gardens Boulevard, was just really heavy. And so we had some drivers in there with a big claw truck, you know, and they'd make one stop and fill their whole truck and have to go dump it. And, you know, if you're trying to go a whole block, that alone might take, you know, all day to go six blocks on one street. So you just don't know how fast you're going to be able to progress until you really get into it. So that's why we try to put this map together. We show the zones of where we're going to shift to each day, and you can kind of see where we left off. So if we left off two blocks from your house, you know, we're getting closer. That's, I think, the best way we've found to be able to communicate that information.
That's awesome. And that's all available on your website?
Yep. There's a hurricane debris collection section.
Beautiful.
And right now, that map's looking very green, which is, you know.
Yeah. A nice breath of air.
Yeah.
A weight off your shoulder,
yes,
for sure.
Yeah.
Now, one more random question. Where does the debris go? Like, where do you take it? Do you take it to the landfill?
Good question. So this year, we actually were able to work with Polk County and a debris contractor and FEMA and established a management site at our public works facility here in town.
Okay.
And that's been a huge, huge factor for us. And I didn't mention that earlier, but when we, you know, on a normal day, our big claw trucks go into the county landfill. We might run two or three loads in a day.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that just has to do with the logistics, right? Like if you're going from Lake Ashton to the landfill, that's 45 minutes.
Yeah, that's a trip.
Right. For there, then you're in the landfill for a while, dump your load, and then you're getting back on the route another 30 or 45 minutes back. That's half your day you just spent. During Irma, we took debris to Simmers Young Park over off of Wrecker Highway area.
Yep.
And so when we were doing that, we were pulling about five or six loads a day. But now taking it to our facility here, we've been able to pull, you know, 10 to 14 loads a day. So that's a dramatic difference from what we were able to do previously. And right now, all of that we're hauling it, and we filled the whole site out there, and now we're in the process of mulching all that down and getting ready to take it off site and restore that site back. So again, that's another, it's out of sight, out of mind for everybody else, but we're still going to be dealing with it out there for a little while.
That's awesome, though.
Yep.
That's a big difference from 1 to 2 to 14.
It's huge, and it's really helped us be able to get through stuff a lot quicker. And I gotta say, the county, you know, they coordinate the debris contract, and the contractor that we've had has been great to work with, and they've brought a lot of trucks. Again, remember I said a more focused response to a more focused impact. We've had about 24 trucks from the contractor working in our area for a few weeks as well.
Awesome. So you can find all that information on the website along with an interactive version of the lakes report, correct?
Yes. Yeah, that interactive version of the lakes report, again, I'm obviously biased, but is super cool. And I've looked hard to find other stuff to compare it to, and I think it's just one of the coolest things out there. You know, you can, it's all the same data that's represented in the lakes report, but in a way that you can kind of click through and you can click on, hey, here's Lake Howard and here's the information, here's what's happening, here's how it relates to other lakes, and just find out a whole bunch of really cool stuff.
Well, you've been with us for so long and given so much great information, but I do want to end with one more question because you are just like the lakes expert, right? Or one of them at least. So what do you think is the most exciting thing on the horizon for our lakes?
Yeah, I think data-driven lake management. So a lot of the work that we do in public works is all data-driven, right? So the way that we just talked about with debris collection, the way we manage, the way we pave roads is all data-driven. The way we manage our stormwater systems is data-driven. The way we manage our street sweeping program is data-driven. And so the way we manage our lakes is the same way. But again, to understand what's happening in lakes takes time.
Mm-hmm.
And we're finally really hitting a point where we've built these systems up over the last 10 years to really have a good understanding in an almost real-time fashion about what's happening in those lakes. And now we're starting to be able to apply that data much quicker. So while we still in lakes management, we still work on these really long timelines, we have a more real-time understanding so we can respond quicker. I think a really good example of that is what we call our Rapid ID, Rapid Response program. And so that's looking at invasive species in lakes. So we go out and we monitor vegetation in the lakes. We recognize that, hey, there's an invasive plant here and the population is maybe getting to a point where we need to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
And we can respond quickly. So again, it's that early detection, early response. And, you know, in the past, we didn't have that data on an even annual basis.
Yeah.
So it would wait until a lake got to be very problematic. Then you go out and try and assess it, and then you're trying to fight a battle that you've already lost a lot of ground on.
Mm-hmm.
And so by being able to identify these things early, respond to them early, you know, it may still take a year or two to see the cycle improve, but it's better than it taking 5 or 10 years to see that cycle improve. So just being able to use that data and apply management quicker is really, I think, an exciting part of where we're at right now with lake management in Winter Haven.
That's awesome. There's so much we could talk about. I could probably talk to you all day, but I know you have a job to do. So thank you so much for being with us today, MJ. Really appreciate your expertise, all your comments, and just your time for being here on this podcast.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
We'd like to welcome and thank Advent Health for sponsoring season 5 of our podcast. From stopping a heart attack in its tracks to treating a stroke at the first sign of symptoms, Advent Health is ready for every emergency. And with various locations around Polk County, Advent Health makes it convenient to access award-winning emergency care 24/7. So when minutes matter most, you never have to delay getting the care that can save you or your loved one's life. To find an Advent Health ER near you, visit theerexperts.com.
We'd like to thank today's podcast guest, MJ Carnevale with the City of Winter Haven.
Be sure to tune in every week to It's Happening in the Haven, available on all your favorite podcasting platforms. To learn more about Winter Haven and the Chamber, visit winterhavenchamber.com or follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. We hope you've learned a little bit about our community today and even more about the people who are shaping its future. After all, no true community exists without the people who form it. Winter Haven. Some call it a haven, we call it home.